It's time for another Political Rewind. Glad to have everybody with us for today's show. Now that we have restaurants opening, or in some cases not opening, or at least there is an order that they can if they want to, we now have massage therapists, we have bowling alleys, we have tattoo artists, everybody who can go out there and start business if they want to. We thought this would be a good day to talk to some small business operators about where they stand on moving forward with getting their businesses back up and running. And we're going to get to that, excuse me, in just a minute. Before we do, let me give you the latest figures that we're looking at from the Department of Public Health. By the way, Tom Faust points out to me the Department of Public Health, State Department of Public Health website has really stepped up its game and has put a lot more information, a lot more data, a lot more charts on that site. It's worth checking out when you get a chance. In the meantime, here's what they're telling us as of, I think, 7 p.m. last night. We now have 24,349 confirmed cases. That's up 921 cases in 24 hours. That's important because it means that we're still gaining cases in Georgia at the same time the governor has decided he wants to open at least parts of our economy back up again. We've had, at this point, 1,038 deaths, 122 deaths reported in just the past 24 hours. Daugherty County has the most deaths, 114. Fulton follows with 103. And other metro Atlanta counties fall behind that. Bartow, Mitchell, Sumter also have double-digit deaths reported in their communities, which we're very sorry to have to report. So let's go ahead and get into a conversation first about the reopening that Governor Kemp initiated last week. He came out yesterday afternoon and held a news conference in which he was very adamant in defending his reasons for reopening the state and lashed out at critics who didn't approve of what he'd done. I want to welcome Tamar Hallerman, who, of course, is a senior reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, is with us on Tuesdays to be part of this section of the conversation before we introduce our business guests. Tamar, the governor was very sharp yesterday in going after critics, saying that they didn't understand what the data shows. He was tough on everybody except President Trump, who's the one who lashed out at him twice last week. What did you make of the way the governor presented himself and presented his argument yesterday?
Well, his tone, especially during the question and answer session, reminded me a lot of something you'd see out of the president. The first question came from an NBC News reporter, and immediately, you know, the governor kind of came out very sharply saying, you know, I know it may be hard for NBC News to understand this, but all the data supports what we're doing. And he really did take a sharper tack when it came to that. Last night, we saw his public health commissioner, Kathleen Toomey, in a video posted on the governor's Twitter account, kind of walk through the state's reasoning for reopening. And then when it comes to Trump, you're right, Bill. That was kind of the one person who the governor did not go after yesterday. And he kept saying, you know, he appreciated what the president is doing. And he also talked about the media dividing us, which was a very, very Trumpian response.
You know, one of the things that I find fascinating, Tamar, and I know you have been digging for weeks now because we've talked about this, to get more data. You want to understand what data the state is looking at. And I thought yesterday, once again, was an example of where the governor's position on this, and especially in response to the NBC reporter, seems to be, just trust us. We have the data. Don't worry about it. We have the data we need to be able to start reopening for business. And I thought that was sort of an, I'm not quite sure why they're not more willing. I don't doubt that they have that data, but it feels as though that's something that a Governor Kemp could be giving us in ways that would underpin his argument a bit better. It does feel like he leaves us with this sense that, just go along with me, I know what I'm talking about. I think that's part of the discomfort some people are feeling.
Yeah, the White House and its guidelines for states that want to reopen their economies, and I say guidelines because they're suggestions, but they're not requirements. States can go ahead. They do list about 6 or 7 prerequisites that states are supposed to meet. And so I've been kind of talking to the Department of Public Health, kind of going down the list. Okay, you know, the White House says you need to see a downward trajectory in, for example, influenza-like illnesses reported within a 14-day period. Does Georgia meet this? Do we meet the downward trajectory of documented COVID-19 cases? And on and on and on. And you know, it's hard. And there's a lot of kind of splitting hairs here sometimes. You may see an encouraging trend, but sometimes it's hard to point to exact data. You listen to Kathleen Toomey, and yesterday she mentioned how, you know, the state did not yet fully meet the criteria, but mentioned that she saw enough kind of positive downward trends that she felt good about the decision. And she mentioned the state was on track to plateau in numbers. One thing that Brian Kemp said yesterday that was interesting is he talked about how, you know, there are all sorts of models and how, you know, they're only so helpful in all of this. He could only listen to so many because they're just projections, and any action that he's going to take is going to change those models. And that's absolutely true. The IMHE model from the University of Washington, the one that the governor has mentioned a lot in his press conferences, you know, this model has changed in the past week or so to show that indeed the peak for Georgia is ahead of us, not behind us as we initially thought. And the whole model is underpinned on Georgia maintaining shelter in place until June, which looks like that might not be the case. So a lot of things changing really quickly, and it's kind of hard to get a full sense of what Kemp is up to.
Let's just to share with listeners who didn't get a chance to see the governor at his news conference yesterday, just to get a taste of kind of the attitude he brought with him. Let's listen to that exchange with the NBC reporter. He had just finished a long statement, and she, I believe, was the first one to get a chance to ask a question. We're going to first hear her, and then we'll hear the governor respond.
Twice last week, the president criticized the decision, said it was too soon, as have a number of governors or mayors across the state. And the state doesn't meet the White House threshold for a recommended 2-week decline in cases.
Was that a question or an opinion?
Nope, that's a question.
You just made a statement. You didn't ask a question. What's your question?
Getting to the question right now, sir. Okay. Thank you so much. For those who say that the move came prematurely, that this came too soon, can you tell us specifically what data you use to determine that this was the safest choice?
Well, I know it may be hard for NBC News to understand this, but all the data is publicly available on the Public Health Department's website.
I think, Tamara, that's part of what I mean. I understand that the governor's feeling a bit defensive right now. He has been under a lot of pressure. He's been attacked. But it strikes me that that's a moment in which he could have said, well, yeah, we do have some data. Let's give you the numbers, whether it's him or Kathleen Toomey, instead of turning this into his decision to go after the media claiming that we're trying to divide him. It's just, you're right, it's a Trumpian kind of choice, Tamara.
Yeah, and I mean, right now in the Republican Party, you, as an elected official, especially in Georgia, as a Republican, you can't criticize the president. You can't get away with that right now and stay popular with the Republican base. So that option has been taken away from the governor. And I guess, you know, he'd been under a ton of pressure from people like Trump to begin taking steps to reopen. What do you do at this point? You point to an enemy that's proven to be pretty potent with your base.
One last thing, and then we're going to move on. We're approaching the moment in which the governor will announce whether or not he's going to extend the shelter-in-place order. That's set to expire at the end of Thursday, April 30th. Will he extend it into May? He's already extended it for vulnerable people in the population, the elderly, those with additional health risks. But Tamara, given that he's already started opening some of the economy, it's going to be interesting to see how he responds to the decision to lift shelter in place. And we have no idea At least I don't. Do you, where he's heading?
No, not at all. And he mentioned yesterday he was still trying to look at the data and figure out what he wanted to do. But already since then, he's announced on Twitter that he's going to allow short-term rentals like Airbnbs to resume. So potentially that's a sign that he might want to end that shelter in place. As you mentioned, he said he's going to continue it for elderly people, more vulnerable population, until mid-May. And he was pretty strong that is something that is of high mind for him, and that may well continue if data shows that there's not much of a change there.
Okay, we'll watch for that. The governor's office suggested sometime tomorrow we may hear from him on that decision. All right, let's move on. We know, everybody knows, that the governor began allowing certain businesses to open again as of Friday. Bowling alleys, massage therapists, barbershops, hairstylists, tattoo parlors, and others. And of course, yesterday was the day that restaurants were given permission to once again have in-dining hospitality. Most turned out not to want to do that. We don't think that there's a great rush to open restaurants across the state. And for that matter, we didn't see a lot of barbershops, a lot of hairstylists, and others who could start on Friday opening up either. Although I have to say, there were people lined up to get their haircut in Atlanta on Friday morning when doors were opening. That said, let's talk to three business owners in Georgia about their situations and listen to how they're planning to get back to business once they feel they can. We're going to talk to Christopher Escobar. He is the owner of the Plaza Theater in Atlanta. Chris, you've been the owner. How long have you had the Plaza Theater, which is kind of an institution on Ponce de Leon here? It's been around for, what, almost 85 years, right?
Yeah, 81 years. I've owned it for just going on 3 years now, but I've been involved with the Plaza for the last nine.
And it's important to say that when you came along, you essentially were part of an effort to rescue the Plaza. It had fallen on very, very hard times. It looked as if the Plaza would close its doors, that we'd lose a theater that was cherished by the Atlanta community. But you have made a major effort to really revitalize it and keep it alive. So in a minute, we'll talk to you about how the pandemic is affecting that. We're also joined by Bunny Hilliard, who is the owner of Brave and Kind Bookstore in Decatur. Bunny, your store caters to children and families. How are you doing these days? And how long have you had your store open?
That's right. We are in the Oakhurst neighborhood of Decatur, and we have made just around a year and a half in business. We have in a business that has been built around connecting the community and family. It has certainly been a challenge to maintain that spirit as we move our inventory online and change ourselves into an online bookstore.
So I want to ask you one quick question, because I think there's some confusion about what stores, what kind of retail has been open and what hasn't been. There was nothing that prevented you from keeping your doors open for retail during the shelter-in-place decree, was there? You were never required, as restaurants were, to shut down to business in your stores, were you?
I think our city in particular, city of Decatur, did have specific rules around inviting folks into your establishment. So, yes,
City, but the state, yeah, but the city, but right. The state didn't prevent you from doing it. Okay, I'm glad you told me that. Tamara, you want to start by asking a question of Christopher or Bunny?
Yeah, so I'm curious about how you guys have approached the whole government aid debate. The Paycheck Protection Program from Congress has proven to be wildly popular with small businesses, who I'm sure are all taking, you know, really hard financial hits right now. And I'm curious how you guys approached that when the money was made available, whether it was something that you guys knew you wanted to apply for, or if there were reservations, and did you ultimately apply?
Yep. Ronnie, would you like to go first?
Sure. So I chose not to apply for the Paycheck Protection Program. I'm a sole proprietor and largely ran just by myself and my husband and my kids. And so, you know, feeling like the only person's paycheck that was affected was my own, I did feel the need to kind of acquiesce to other small businesses, folks that I know who have other mouths to feed in their staff and employees. And so while I did apply to some of the grants that were out there, I chose not to.
Chris?
I'll say for us, we've applied to like 10 different things, certainly at the Plaza Theater and then the other organization I run, the Atlanta Film Society, which does the Atlanta Film Festival. Payroll protection, the EIDL, a number of others in the private sector. I'll say for the Plaza Theater, I think we're hopeful that we're going to get the payroll protection program. And that's only because we've been lucky enough to work with City National Bank on that. But the interesting thing about this is people got to keep in mind, it is only based on 1 month payroll. The Plaza, we have 10 employees. We're pretty lean and mean, so we don't have a huge payroll. And so on top of the fact that it's limited in what it would do towards there, you're allowed to use it for things like rent and utilities and otherwise, but the amount you get is not based on those expenses. And so if you're a place like ours that's had skyrocketing property taxes for the last few years or property expenses, you're allowed to use those funds, but the funds you get aren't with that in consideration. So it's kind of a paradigm there that's a challenge. But
and how helpful has this
Chris,
city
have
been?
You had...
I'm curious how helpful the city has been. There's some business owners who I've talked to over the last month or so who've asked, the city to be a little more lenient when it comes to collecting taxes, that sort of thing. Have they proven to be helpful to you guys?
In that regard, and keep in mind, at the Plaza, we don't pay the property taxes directly. We pay it through the property owners. So there is a kind of a distance there. I was hoping to go after the Invest Atlanta program, and it basically closed as quickly as it opened because they got just overwhelmed with applications. The city recently approved a level of funding for small businesses, and we're going to be pursuing that as well. From the regard of relief aid, we haven't been able to have any luck yet with the city. But I will say, in terms of guidelines of operating or otherwise, the city's kind of been the only place that we've generally had some guidance. So we're very thankful for that.
So I want to go back and ask each of you to talk a bit. Oh, go ahead, Bunny.
Well, I was just going to say I'm leasing my space, and so working directly with my property owner to kind of gain some relief as we move forward, knowing that I am unable to utilize the space that I'm leasing in the way that we intended.
Yeah, I had asked about
let me go back. let me go back and, Chris, talk to you and then to Bunny just about the basics of where you stand right now. Chris, you said you have 10 employees. Have you had to lay them off at this point? Are they not able to are you not able to pay them at this point?
So most theaters in the city, every other theater in the city of Atlanta is owned by some major corporation out of state of Georgia. They laid off all their employees even before they were required to close. They closed and did that. In my opinion, the people who take care of the Plaza are as indivisible as our marquee, as our screen. If I don't have employees, the building might as well not exist. So we've resisted that and have kept our employees on payroll to the capacity that they're available for the last 40 days since we've been closed. And been a challenge, but yeah, something we've been committed to doing.
So then let me ask you the most fundamental question. The governor says you can open your doors again. Why have you decided not to?
It's not really that complicated, or, you know, it doesn't even take much to think about it, because truth be told, we're a venue where you've got to spend a few hours of time probably near a bunch of strangers, and you can't, and you're there to have a good time. You can't have a good time if you're nervous about being safe. I mean, it's quite frankly speaking. And additionally, my very small staff over the course of, you know, doing business would interact with, you know, virtually all of the customers there. So it just, it doesn't make sense for them. And a lot of people are saying, you know, okay, well, you don't feel safe. Don't go bowling. Don't get a tattoo, all that kind of thing. But it puts the employer in a really tough situation if they're telling their employees, you either have to be there or you no longer have a job. I mean, that's incredibly unfair. Now, that being said, doesn't mean we're doing nothing. Doesn't mean we're saying thanks, but no thanks, Governor Kemp. We are going to make use of the leeway that this gives us by doing some projects around the theater, you know, just with the staff being in the building, you know, running an online shop. We're going to be doing private screenings for individual first responder families. And then the biggest thing we're excited about is we're going to be launching a drive-in, hopefully starting this weekend. All of that would not be allowable were it not the leeway this gives. And this is one of the things that people outside of the state don't really understand. Georgia and how we have such extremes of progressive and conservative views don't understand the situation, the complexity here. But, I mean, sometimes some leeway can give you a chance to be creative and think outside the box without compromising people's safety.
Bunny, you said at the beginning that you're able to switch some of your sales online, and I looked at your website before we did the show and saw that you're really promoting that right now. You also said that you're pretty much just a family business. But it does strike me that, first of all, how are you doing with online sales? Is it making up in any way for having foot traffic?
No, I mean, it certainly is our lifeline. It is definitely keeping us afloat, but it is not, you know, I'd say my sales have declined by half at least. And so it is not making up for the foot traffic as a whole. You know, I will say that it has certainly required me to get creative and build this robust website. Certainly was on our to-do list for this year, put in lightning speed. Hoping that when all of this is over and we are on the other side of this, that I can, you know, utilize this as an additional revenue stream for our business. But the business is based on community, and so we are unable to host celebrations and the creative writing classes and workshops and you know, the other author events and things where families come and gather, which was the bulk of creating a large footprint and a foot traffic into the store. So while it has proved helpful, it's not making up for, you know, from a revenue perspective, what is going to sustain us in the long run.
Well, are you ready to open your doors again?
Am I ready, or do I feel like that's a good idea? For us, I do not. It doesn't feel safe. It does feel very daunting to consider opening our doors and inviting families into this space. And, you know, part of the reason that people come here is because it does, you know, feel like a third home to them. And so I can't imagine with the uncertainty feeling comfortable doing that at this time. I feel like I would be putting myself and my family in danger and other people's families as well. It just doesn't feel like the right time to do that.
I'm wondering what you guys would like to see or what you would need to see in order to feel comfortable reopening, you know, fully in your traditional ways that you've been open. Does there need to be a vaccine? Or do you think you would hit a point where economically it becomes so dire that you would feel the need to try and reopen?
I'll say, jump in. For one, I would need to see clear directives from public health officials and not elected officials that this is advisable. I think in a time like this, it's important to know what you know and then be humble and know what you don't know. And I don't know public health and policy. I do know that elected officials are under pressure to get reelected. And so they have reasons outside of science to say and do things, including economics and otherwise. And the reason I'm staying closed is because of science. You know, economically, we've been hit by a tornado, I say. And it, just because you can say, okay, you can open your doors, doesn't mean there's not a tree still in the middle of the way and a road's blocking and people aren't safe coming. So just because we can open doesn't mean it'll be safe for my staff. Doesn't mean I can get the access to gloves and masks and all that level of hand sanitizer and cleaning, you know, all that sort of thing. Doesn't mean customers want to come. And, you know, what does it matter if I'm trying to be open like regular, you know, business and no one shows up? So, to me, I don't have a metric or a specific indicator. You know, I need clear signs from the people to know what they're talking about.
You also need inventory.
So, yeah, I mean, well, for me, I don't have the same challenge that other movie theaters do that completely rely on the same handful of companies putting out new product because they're not right now. I'm lucky enough for our clientele knows and understands that we play a little bit of everything, including independent content, which is still available and out there, as well as the repertory content, you know, titles that have been out for years. So that's not as much of a challenge that it is for me as it is for the chains.
All right, look, I want to get Bunny back into the conversation, and I understand we now have Brad Evans with us from Macon, so we'll invite him into our discussion as well. But first, let's get to a break. We'll be right back. We're back on Political Rewind, a quick program note. Tomorrow on Political Rewind, we're going to talk about mental health. And by that, I mean your mental health and my mental health in the middle of this pandemic. I'm pretty much an optimist by nature. I'm always fairly certain that things are going to get better no matter what. But let's face it, concerns about assuring the health of family and friends, our uncertainty about what's going to happen next, lack of social interaction are pretty troubling. And so tomorrow, we're going to bring in a psychiatrist, Dr. Raymond Kotwicki. Kotwicki is the chief medical officer at Skyland Trail, which is one of the premier nonprofit mental health institutions in Georgia. And I'm going to let him talk to us about the tools we need to cope during the pandemic. That's on Political Rewind tomorrow. In the meantime, we're talking with small business operators today. And I want to get back to that conversation right now and welcome, I'm sorry, Brad Evans, that we had some trouble at the beginning getting you on, but just to introduce you again, you're the owner of the Society Garden in Macon. You've been shut down since March 15th, and you can't reopen because the governor has said bars are not able to open yet. You also, though, you've gotten, Tamara, this is interesting. You asked a few minutes ago about loans, about the bailouts from our other guests today. Brad Evans, you've already gotten a payment from the feds, yes?
We have, yes. We applied, the day that we could start applying for the PPP loan. And we also applied for an SBA emergency loan. And we also applied for a grant from a local foundation here called the Macon 30-Day Fund, and they all actually we got approval last week on all of them and received the funds last week. So, you know, for us, it takes a lot of pressure off. You know, I know it's not an ideal loan, but right now it's the only loan we got. So, you know, for us, it allows us to even as bars are allowed to reopen, and I honestly think the way things are going, they might be allowed by our governor here pretty soon. We would be able to make the decision to do what we think is right because we have those funds now that takes a little of the economic pressure off of us.
How many employees do you have?
We have 8 employees right now.
And are they laid off or are you trying to keep them on payroll?
We have kept them on payroll. And once the loans came in last week, we were able to back pay some of our employees for the time that they've missed since March 15th. We cut them all checks the day we got the funds, and that really helped them out. A lot of our employees have second jobs as well, and some of them have been laid off from those, and some have not. So, in our situation, most of them are doing pretty good right now.
And I have the same question for Bunny and Brad that I had for Chris. which is what you guys would need to see either from policymakers or just in terms of infection rates in order to reopen? And how much does pure economics and the need to keep your businesses afloat, how much could that impact your decision of when to reopen down the line?
I mean, you know, I understand businesses who are hurting, who, you know, have to open in order to have a source of income. I mean, you take away somebody's ability to feed their kids and things get weird. But, you know, I just want to see a little more time go by, and I want to see what happens in the next 3 or 4 weeks with our numbers. Again, I would like to see some health officials give us some clearance, not elected officials. It's going to take a lot of time for our customers to be comfortable, and I think I just think we need more time. I would hope that by mid-June or end of June that we could start to figure it out. I would never feel comfortable right now opening up our doors.
I mean, I'd have to be in agreement with the both of them. The things that they are saying are certainly my idea of what feels just more comfortable. I don't see. I certainly in my mind, June felt like okay. Well, let's hold tight until June, and see where we are. I'm going to need to see kind of some proven remedies where you know, some examples of where things have been successful, again, from public health officials as opposed to elected officials. And certainly, if I don't feel comfortable enough to send my children to school, I wouldn't feel comfortable enough inviting them all into this space either. And so, you know, that's been another major kind of thing to contend with is managing, you know, what's happening here with also what's happening with the schools. I have an 8-year-old and an 11-year-old. And so, you know, thinking about, I think that's a major kind of litmus test for me personally is to follow what the schools are doing.
And all of you guys have mentioned this in one way or another, but kind of different messages that you've heard from some politicians in the state and maybe not having a ton of clarity about kind of what's safe to do right now. Can you guys talk about that a little bit? Because it's something that the governor mentioned yesterday, and he kind of blamed it on us, the media. But just talk to me about how you guys have sifted through all this really rapidly changing information, and how long it took for you to come to your decision to stay closed.
I mean, this is really important, especially in the beginning when I don't think really anybody knew the scope of what was going to happen. I just needed guidance, and we didn't get it from our governor, and we didn't get it from our mayor here in Macon either. We closed before we were required to close. It was another week and a half before our mayor spoke on it at all. The first time he spoke, he said some words that were pretty offensive. He just called it wasn't a big deal for most people, were his words, and that it would just be a minor inconvenience for most of us. And that, you know, at that point, I'd already, you know, lost tens of thousands of dollars and was set, you know, we were set to lose a lot more. So I could have used a little more guidance, and I could have, I think everybody around us could have. I mean, I think if we'd have all shut down a little earlier, you know, maybe we'd be in a different spot right now.
So I'm interested in the fact that we have on this panel today, Chris and Brad. Brad has already received, some of the money that was appropriated by Congress and by the president, And Christopher, you've applied here and there and haven't gotten anything at all. And this disparity about who's getting money, no problem with you, Brad. It's terrific that you got money, but Christopher, you're still struggling. And this is part of the problem that people are feeling across the country, I think, is that we're uncertain about who's getting money and when and why.
Yeah. Well, and just to be fully clear, it looks like we probably will get payroll protection, even though those funds haven't come through. But yeah, everything else we haven't done. And even the payroll protection we're getting is a drop in the bucket at this point. I mean, yeah, that's where I really do understand at least where they're coming from, even if I don't necessarily agree on the approach, the people who are protesting and all that, because at the end of the day, I think all of us, one way or another, we're on a spectrum of realizing, okay, we need to hunker down, we need to do this, and especially because the message from government at all levels was, listen, this is what we need you to do, don't worry, we'll figure out the programs, we'll do the unemployment, we'll do the business relief, all of that, and so people held their breath. Then people started to turn blue in the face. And when folks who had been told they'd be covered on unemployment, all of a sudden, oh, never mind, just kidding, you're not. And business owners were told, you'll be covered. I mean, sole proprietorships, even like Bunnies and others, were told, okay, you don't worry, we'll get it to you. And then those funds either dried up or are taken up by these mega companies. I mean, I think people are right to feel betrayed and lied to. And we've, seen them not on the same page at the city, state, and federal level. And we've seen, a failure to manage expectations, I think, if nothing else. And then just really a kind of a lack of consistency. And to one hand, on one hand, you got to understand these are people. This is a situation like we've never dealt with. But on the other hand, I think sometimes they're creating expectations that are just unrealistic sometimes. And so, I mean, those are the things I'm looking for is for them to be a little more coordinated, give us a better sense of the kind of things they know and don't know, and at what points they're going to be making, decisions on, and have a little bit of consistency.
Bunny, you've said you'd rather the money go to people who you believe are more worthy of it or more needing of it, put it that way. But what's interesting about that is there was in the last measure, I think it was the second round of funds that were made available, there was something like $60 billion earmarked here for women and minority businesses that presumably you at your bookstore could have taken advantage of.
Right. So I did apply for many grant opportunities that were specific to women and minorities and just small businesses in general. I think at the onset of the release of the different government and paid PPP loans. That's a tongue twister. PPP loans, I was a little nervous about taking on additional debt and being a new business and feeling my ability to, if this did not all work out in my favor, the ability to repay that.
I'm watching, I get to see all of you on FaceTime, yeah. And I'm watching as you're talking, Bunny. I'm seeing Chris nodding vigorously.
Exactly. Yeah,
when it comes to that.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to be able to get a loan from a cash flow standpoint, but then you're going to have to have the ability to bounce back hard and repay that loan. And folks like Bunny are trying to go, I'm not going to bite off more than we can chew. And I certainly understand the same thing. I mean, in some ways, my business is sort of like Bunny's in that, there's individual people and things like that. But in some ways, it's like Brad's in that my business, honestly, by and large, the single biggest significant source of business for us is our special events and rentals, where it's 200-300 people in the building. And even when I can reopen and have regular, movies and screenings, that business for me is going to be obliterated for probably the rest of the year, because there's not going to be people and companies who are willing to throw down the kind of money that requires, because there's too much uncertainty for them. And so even when you're allowed to reopen, if you've taken out all these loans, unless it's these that have forgivable clauses to them, you're going to need to be able to repay them and earn even more money than you normally would to pay for the expenses you currently have, much less the ones you've been racking up for the last few months. So it's an incredibly difficult situation.
All right, we've got to get our final break of the show out of the way. But when we come back, I want to ask, along with Tamar Hallerman, a couple of hard questions. The hardest of all is to ask our three guests how they're feeling about the ability to survive this very difficult crisis. We'll ask that and more, but let's take a break from Political Rewind. Welcome back to Political Rewind. I'm joined today by senior reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Tamar Hallerman, who joins us on Tuesday's shows, and also three small business operators in Georgia. Brad Evans is the owner of the Society Garden in Macon. It's a beer garden and music venue that he owns with his wife. Bunny Hilliard, the owner of Brave and Kind Bookstore, a children's bookstore, and you describe it also as a community space in Decatur, Bunny. And Christopher Escobar, owner of the Plaza Theater in Atlanta, an institution to people who are familiar with it as they drive down Ponce and see that wonderful Art Deco marquee that still marks the Plaza Theater. So let me, if I could, and Tamar, please weigh in here, but I know this is a very hard question, but I'd like to ask each of you how confident you are that you're going to be able to pull through this. Why don't we start with you, Brad, because you're closed down and the state won't allow you to open, even though you may not want to quite yet. Are you going to survive?
Yeah, we are. You know, I think hard times are nothing new to small business owners, and I've been one my entire adult life. And, you know, we know how to get through things. We know how to adapt. And I do think we are going to survive. That is going to require us to be able to, you know, to open at some point. I'm just gonna believe that we're gonna figure it out. I don't really have any other option right now. You know, I know some things are gonna have to change, and I know we're gonna have to seriously adapt to some new procedures. And I know it's gonna take a while, but I do believe that we'll. All of us as small business owners are going to try to find a way. You know, this is what we do.
What does that mean, new procedure? I mean, are you envisioning the business itself? In some ways, it's going to have to change and adapt. You're going to have to be more nimble in that way. Are you talking about how you run your operations behind the scenes? How do you see that happening?
I wish I could look into the future and see. I just can't, you know. I know that we're definitely going to have to limit our capacity whenever we are able to reopen. My particular space is almost exclusively outdoors, and it's very large. So, you know, I personally feel a little better being outside than inside right now. But, you know, I just feel like, you know, whatever it takes for us to be open and survive is what we'll do. But we're certainly going to keep the safety of our staff and our customers in mind first. We can hold on for a few months if we have to. Everybody's not lucky enough to be in that position. I'm certainly grateful that we are. But I just think as this goes on, we're just going to have to figure out a way to make it. It's our only option, right?
Yeah, I realize it's a tough question, and my heart is with all three of you. Bunny, you run this lovely children's bookstore, your community gathering place. How concerned are you about being able to hang on and survive this?
You know, it's really funny. As a small business owner, I think, you know, the nature of owning a small business is you have to be optimistic. You have to be hopeful to even embark upon such a journey. And so I think it's innate in us to continue to believe until we don't have any other choice. I've only allowed myself to be hopeful during this entire process. And that doesn't mean that I, you know, haven't had some, you know, nights full of anxiety. But I will say I haven't had a day where I didn't have some sales. You know, throughout this and throughout this entirety of the neighborhood, you know, the train. we consider ourselves. I say we because I feel like I have built something that is as extremely community based and driven. And we consider ourselves kind of a corner neighborhood bookshop, and the neighborhood has been extremely supportive. With their online orders, with calling in and emailing, with checking in. I've had the ability to, you know, reach a broader audience since we've moved our inventory online and getting sales from all over the United States and outside of the United States as well, because we've had to adapt and change and get creative with the way that we do business. And so, I believe we will make it to the other side of this okay. And I haven't allowed myself to believe anything different since the onset.
Okay. Tamar, you know, we want to bring Christopher in about that same question, but what occurs to me, Tamar, whether it's by coincidence or not, Sam Burmistawes, who brought all of our guests together for this show, he ended up with three people whose businesses rely on community, on our coming together, and whether it's sitting together in a movie theater, in a beer garden, coming and mingling in a bookstore with our neighbors from around us in Decatur. And I mean, and you know, it's not, they're not clothing stores, which are important, but these rely on bringing communities together. And as we go through this pandemic, Tamar, it strikes me that operations like this are going to be more important than ever to getting us somehow to rekindle that spirit of a community.
And something that's so encouraging to hear, you know, I'm a journalist, so I always joke that in general we tend to be kind of pessimistic people, and I think I kind of certainly am. So it's great to see that everyone is still optimistic about and hopeful about what's to come, even in these really dire circumstances. So it's nice to hear, guys.
Chris, I said at the beginning in introducing you, the Plaza Theater has had its ups and downs. It's looked on any number of occasions like it wasn't going to survive. You've kept it going. You've expanded the programming you're doing there. But a year from now, will the Plaza Theater still exist?
I think if the community around us has anything to do with it, yeah. And I got to say, I'm only sort of continuing what people before me have done in sacrificing their time and their sweat and their energy and their dollars from previous owners who, like Johnny and Gail Ray, who took out a mortgage on their house to keep the place from turning into a Walgreens, to some incredible people who have, committed their time or their art or otherwise. You know, for me, I'm trying to look at the short term versus the long term, and we're very lucky where the community has rallied behind us. The Plaza Theater Foundation launched a GoFundMe, and people have been contributing there and donating everywhere from 78 cents to $7,500. People have been buying vouchers and tickets for future screenings and going to our online screenings and our merchandise and things like that. It's been really incredible. I know we can make it through the short term, but going back to the point about racking up debt, I mean, we even though we've been bringing some dollars in, we still are bleeding. You know, there's a Band-Aid on the outside, but there's still internal bleeding. And the only way we're going to fix that is with real solutions for the long term to be able to bounce back. And so that's why we're trying to work with our property owners, Asana partners, to figure out a long-term lease and see if we can make use of this time while we're down to do some of the more major projects that will allow us to earn more revenue once we're reopened. And so I think if I have a clear sense of the long term, then I'll be confident that we'll continue to survive. Right now, it's uncertain. As we're continuing to work through this, but I do remain really, really hopeful. And that is only because while we do need dollars, we also need the will to go on. And people have been amazing with their comments and their encouragement. And that's the kind of thing that makes you determined to press on. Just like Brad said, there's, you know, giving up's not really an option.
That's Christopher Escobar, owner of the Plaza Theater in Atlanta. We've also been talking to Bunny Hilliard, owner of Brave and Kind Bookstore, a children's bookstore and community space in Decatur, and Brad Evans, owner of the Society Garden in Macon, which is a beer garden and music venue. Tamar Hallerman, the word that keeps popping up, and I think all of them, none of them used it, but we could have applied it to each of them over and over in our conversations about coronavirus. People learning to be nimble, whether it's in business, whether it's in science research, any of the other things we talk about. Being nimble seems to be the key to how people feel they're going to get through this.
Yeah, and what I'm curious to see overall is how many of the things we do, the changes we make, end up being permanent or lasting longer than this crisis.
All right, that's it. We're out of time for today. Again, we're back tomorrow to talk about mental and emotional health during the middle of the pandemic. I'm looking forward to having you back here for that show. And we'll be with you the rest of the week. We've got a lot of good shows lined up. We'll talk about those shows as we move forward tomorrow. In the meantime, this is Political Rewind. Everybody, have a safe day.